Hey, White Sox fans, Brett Ballantini here. Lucky enough, I don't know ever know why I'm here on these podcasts because I'm as if normally I'm not just smiling and nodding along. When it comes to Dugout Metrics, the podcast, I'm really smiling and nodding along because, you know, it's sort of above my pay grade and IQ level, etc. However, the good news is with me on this Dugout Metrics is someone who it's not above his pay. Well, it probably still is above his pay grade because
we'll have a conversation later.
A little bit of a secret to all of you out there. The pay grade really isn't an issue here at all. That said, certainly not above his IQ level. It's Malachy Hayes joining me here to talk. We're going to do what? Gosh, I dare say, Malachy, I don't know. This might actually skew somewhat positively about the White Sox. I mean, listen, again, I'm, you know, above my IQ level, so don't let me get ahead of things, but it won't all be bad information. There are actually things maybe to get, you know, a little excited about or at least interested in. So we're going to jump right into that. We have probably about a six-pack of pitchers we want to drill down into, and we're going to start, I guess we'll go top to bottom. Let's start, Malachy, in the major leagues, and two guys who, well, until very recently, maybe were heading in different directions, maybe not so much now, but the sensation of the season so far for the White Sox, and really in the majors, is a guy that none of us thought could even pull it off three starts in. That's Garrett Crochet, a guy who not only took the ball on opening day, went longer than any of us expected. He's actually extended his outings. By this third start, at least, he seems like a guy, even though he's getting a little bit of a rest now, which is smart, White Sox. We can talk a little bit about that because the other guy we want to talk about at the major league level is Michael Kopech, someone the White Sox did not perhaps protect the way they should have. But Garrett Crochet, early impressions, if the White Sox are actually trying to look out for him, you know, your thoughts on that, I'm going to guess only positive, but give me some thoughts on Crochet before we drill down into what he's managing to do here this season.
Yeah, I mean, I was flabbergasted as everybody else, I think, when they gave him that opening day nod, even with as barren and depleted as the rotation was at the time of the Dylan Cease trade. In a way, it does kind of make me want to tear my hair out, is, you know, we discussed in our Slack multiple times how it seems pretty obvious in retrospect it would have been smart to just you know, have him go back to the minors and start to begin with, going back to 2021, you know, that little 2020 boost he gave us at the end of that weird once in a lifetime season was nice, and it kind of almost gives you a gosh, what might have been if they had not just kind of rushed him straight back to the major league bullpen in 2021. And might they have had actually a replacement for Carlos Rodon after he left in 2021 or in 2022, excuse me, if they had, you know, had someone like Crochet waiting in the wings, Tommy John aside. But yeah, it seems like his ascendance is almost a little, it does give me a lot of the same vibes as Carlos Rodon's resurgence in 2021, when I remember very distinctly kind of rolling my eyes when they re-signed him and at his performance in spring training, and there was a little bit of buzz going on about him. You know, Steve Stone was very adamant about he was different. And at that point, it's kind of like, all right, let's see it. It's been 4 years at this point or whatever. It's and then he comes out second or third game of the year and absolutely shoves against the Angels, comes out pumping 98 miles an hour with a wipeout slider, and that's exactly what Garrett Crochet did on opening day. And it's remarkable because it's not just, you know, kind of dinking and dunking your way to the numbers that he did. You can't fake, it's like Rodon, you can't fake that 98 mile an hour fastball, you can't fake that slider sweeper. I'm not sure what exactly he calls it, so yeah, that stuff's always been there. It's just really jarring to see it kind of manifest so suddenly, isn't it? I mean, how often do you see this, someone who's been around this long, really suddenly, we always dream on players putting it together and unlocking them, making a click. But how often does it happen after more or less three lost years to this end?
Yeah. I mean, Los is a good connection you're making here. Of course, the guy that everybody sort of lazily, from draft day forward, who Crochet got compared to, of course, Chris Sale. You know, they're left-handers, they're skinny. Okay, you know, I get it. But I mean, Chris Sale and him being adamant about starting had merit. He was a starter. Crochet started like a handful of games in college. He didn't even start in high school. It's great that he aspired to that, but it was a bit more of a punt or a Hail Mary to say, okay, you know what, I want to start now. So the notion that, you know, he's coming off injury and any of us think, you know, can this guy even do it? It's great that he felt he could do it. And the White Sox clearly had a need for guy. I mean, they didn't even have anybody to throw an opening day, for goodness sake. But, I mean, it was way greater a stretch. And so the idea that, you know, Sale moves into the rotation is like, all right, sort of didn't miss a beat. Rodon comes back. He's a guy who clearly was such a high draft choice. This was what he was always supposed to do. Crochet almost from the start was like, what is he even going to be? And the fact that he came up, burned like 800, you know, 100-mile-an-hour pitches there in that 2020 season, you know, only served to throw us off a little bit more about what his role actually would be. So it just makes what he's done this year so much more of a surprise because, you know, again, I mean, I certainly didn't. I don't think anybody thought, you know, he could hold up even through three. And the idea that this guy could maybe be a season-long starter, well-managed if the White Sox do it, you know, what does that mean, 25 starts, 20 starts, 25 starts, innings load. I mean, geez, that's a Christmas gift.
Yeah, I think health is such a huge part of this too. He is clearly much. I don't think we clearly did not fully understand the degree to which he was not 100%. Even going back to 2021, when he threw 60, 70 games, 60 innings, however much it was back then. You know, his velocity was down in that 96, 97 mile an hour range back then. Which at the time I was more inclined to kind of attribute to that's just what he is because 2020 was so weird.
Yeah.
And he came up popping 102 miles an hour constantly because he hadn't pitched all year. It was August and, you know, he had a fresh arm. It was, again, this once in a lifetime type season. So I think part of the reason why this is so out of nowhere bizarre is that you think, okay, he's throwing 97 miles an hour out of the bullpen. You want to try to stretch him out over 4, 5, 6 innings, you know, best case scenario, maybe 7, one or two times. What are you going to have him throw? 93, 94? Has he shown that he has the command to get away with a 93 mile an hour fastball? Does he have, he hasn't, that slider until now hadn't been consistent. He had two or three different variations of it that he had worked on and tinkered with at various points over the past few years. He had never shown anything that indicated that if you took that high velocity that he kind of, you know, makes his hay on away from him and made him work in that low mid-90s, he wouldn't have worked as a starter. But now he's starting, and he's holding that 96, 97, 98 mile an hour velocity, which he absolutely could not. He was touching 98 miles an hour in the sixth inning, and pitch number, pitch number 70, pitch number 80, absolutely would have been unthinkable the last couple of years. So that right there is just the difference that health makes, I think. So, yeah, maybe this little pause, let's hope this little pause period they've got here is a sign that they're not making the same mistakes with him right now that they did, as we've discussed many times, with Michael Kopech 2 years ago when his brilliant start was derailed so quickly.
Asking you to speculate here, Malachi, but we know enough about the Rodon situation that clearly, as it is with any player, the primary reason for them to take a step forward is just their own want to, their own figuring it out, their own work ethic, you know, whatever it is. It's not luck. It's probably not a coach telling them something. But we also do know that with Rodon, it seemed like right away Ethan Katz said there was something clearly wrong with what he was doing with his lower body. I mean, it did seem like there was a fix there. What do you see? Do you see a similar thing? I'm not sure we know about it if it's happened. Do you think this is all, is this all Crochet? Is this, there's an easy, vague answer to give, but what is your sense of you know, where this is coming from? Because he is sort of going like from 0 to 60 this year in a way that I'm not even sure the coaching staff would have anticipated.
Yeah, I honestly don't know how much I can speak to that because we do know for a fact based on, you know, interviews and articles and such that a lot of Rodon's rebirth did come from work with Katz, but also some of the more critical adjustments he made were with the people who he was employing with, employing privately and working with on his own time. I don't know the balance. It's kind of different with every player, how closely each pitcher works with their team. Some of them work, you know, very, very closely with their pitching coaches. Some of them have very little contact with their major league teams and work almost entirely with their private people. I don't know what that balance is with Crochet. I think you know, something that's notable to me beyond the broad results is that his command has just been excellent. So I don't know, you know, he hasn't hardly walked anyone. He's walked four guys in 20 innings or something like that. And that's not, especially for someone who, for whom command was never supposed to be a strong suit, even in the best of times. That speaks to, again, health, but it also speaks to developing a level of mechanical consistency that was probably pretty difficult to do in past years with the combination of his bullpen role and his health and all of the things that were entailed within. So I don't know where that work came from. I don't know if it was with the White Sox, Ethan Katz. I don't know if he has people on his own. But I got to commend him because it really does seem like a lot of consistent work was done to, you know, starting is hard. You know, it's clearly not, it took us by surprise. It kind of struck us as a decision that was like a Hail Mary willy-nilly, like, you know what, fuck it. You know, we're trading Dylan Cease. Who else we got? I think it's, but with all that in mind, it's clear that Garrett Crochet has thought that he is going to be a starter for quite some time now. Going back to the beginning of spring training and going back to last year, clearly. So this is longer in the making than I think any of us really thought or would have anticipated. And yeah, I don't know what the level of synchronism there is with him and the White Sox. But yeah, clearly there's a lot of long-term planning and work involved.
We give a lot of stuff out free to the White Sox. So this time we're going to give something out free to the Beat. Come on, somebody, find the story, write the story. It's out there because there is a story. We don't know the answers. We really don't. I think we can speculate based on knowing the White Sox.
His cutter. He's throwing a cutter now. That's something we haven't talked about yet. I begged them to give Michael Kopech a cutter for years. Guys who have that high 90s fastball and then mid to low 80s nasty, slurvy breaking ball, like both Crochet and Kopech have. They need something in between.
Something that, in the middle.
Hard cutter, hard slider, Jacob DeGrom, 91 mile an hour cutter. Crochet has that now. Who taught him that? Was that Ethan Katz? Did he come up with that on his own? I want to know. I am asking you, people with credential access, please find this out for me.
Okay, we are asking for something, White Sox. Just a one-time access for Malachi Hayes. Just one time. We're not asking for a season. I mean, you should give that to us too, but we're not even asking for that. One time. So this man can get the answers that he's asking right now. Okay, one more question on Crochet. We'll move along. What to you, now seeing that this guy has come, you know, knowing now what the management has been through, I mean, let's call it even four starts, even though he hasn't had four. What he's been able to do going deep into games, pitching efficiently, you know, with the pitch count, he is not, I mean, contrary to, say, a Dylan Cease, he is not abusing that pitch count, presuming he can hold on to that, and yet that the White Sox are going to try to be smart, let's hope, knock on something, with his management, what do you think his 2024 looks like in terms of innings load, starts, whatever it is? Presuming, of course, you know, presuming health, what would be a cap you might put him on, or at least think you're putting him on, and I don't know, maybe nudge him past it a little bit if there's anything to play for, which we know there won't be.
So I have a kind of long-winded answer to that. I do want to backtrack slightly.
Okay.
Godspeed to who else but James Fegan, who did in fact find out the answer to this question for us back at the beginning of April, and that is the cutter is basically an accident. They were the genesis of many a great pitch in baseball history. You know, something that happens accidentally when you're playing catch or whatever. You say, "Oh, why did it do that? See if you can do that again." And that is how it happened. Thank you, James, very much.
Okay, we knew who was going to write that story. We just you know, at the moment I wasn't aware of it.
Went by name. If it was going to be anybody, we knew. You know. So
yes. All right.
As far as like innings limits and caps go, you know, my philosophy or thought on that almost has changed just within the last few weeks or so. Of course, with this huge rash of injuries, and guys like Yuri Perez was the one who made me go like, man, they babied that dude from the start. They didn't let him throw. They service time manipulated him in the name of keeping him fresh, and his elbow still popped. You know.
Yeah.
When you're throwing that hard, I don't know how much you can do. I think I don't think there's a point in setting a hard limit and saying, okay, you know, we're not going to do, look at all the good it did for Steven Strasburg, right? His arm still exploded, and they were as strict with him as they were with anybody famously in big league history with his, they, you know, kept him out of the postseason rotation because he had hit his innings limit and it didn't really wind up doing anything. I think teams have kind of moved beyond that sort of thinking. I think you got to make sure he feels good, whatever that means. And what that probably doesn't mean, you know, not, I'm not one to, presume to know how Garrett Crochet feels after a start or what his recovery routine is. However, I can't imagine that, you know, given his historic innings load, how many innings he literally has on his body that continuing to start every 5 or 6 days for the next more than the next 3-4 months is going to make him feel very good. I mean, think about Carlos Rodon again. His resurgent year in 2021 and what happened to him by the end of the year. And that was a dude who is a horse. He's a tank. Thick with six C's of an individual as you'll find on a pitcher's mound. He had 1,000+ innings on his body and as a starter. And he talked about how in August by September of 2021, after he had been basically out of the game for 2 years in pitching, you know, had Tommy John in 2019, 2020 was also a lost year, that he wasn't hurt. He was just sore. Mm-hmm. He was just sore as hell. And that's why he was down to throwing 90, 91 miles an hour by the end of that season. So, you know, the same thing is probably going to happen to Garrett Crochet if they run him out there. And the same thing happened to Michael Kopech. I don't know what that level of detail was like we do with Rodon, but I think we know what's going to happen if they keep, you know, trying to treat him like any other starting pitcher. So I don't know if there's a number you can put on it, but I think you really got to take every opportunity that they can to give him not just 5, but 6, 7, sometimes even just a week and a half off here, there, you know, and you know, whatever that brings him to. And if he doesn't feel good, then shut it down, you know, but you got to figure out whatever that road is. Cause that's what you can't have him be in that place where he's down to 90 miles an hour and getting shelled because he's sore.
I'll be Malachi's anger translator here and say, if Garrett Crochet says, you know what, coach, my knee hurts as I'm warming up before the game, maybe say, oh, shoot, you know what, we don't like that this is going to happen, but, you know, we really are going to have to go bullpen game. You need to ice that thing, and we need to talk a little bit more about this. So, yeah, hopefully they can be smart enough to not make some of the mistakes that they made with the next fellow we're going to talk about.
Did we not just see the sequence of events of like a report on Yoan Moncada having a hip issue and then literally 6 hours later, him, you know, detaching his adductor or whatever? Like, I mean, has anything changed? Of course not. Come on, man.
Well, we can hope, because at some point, just by accident, maybe they'll do the right thing. So hopefully, in the case of Garrett Crochet, if something like that comes up, just by accident, they'll like mistakenly do the right thing, which they did not really do, maybe from the start with Michael Kopech, a pitcher who hasn't always done himself, you know, favors. He's always had, you know, these varying, composer issues certainly coming up through the minors, a terrible injury as he was just getting his feet under him. Of course, I believe he's pitching through like 5 or 6 starts in a row in the rain, you know, just crazy stuff. But I mean, you know, it's also, as speaking to you, your attitude about babying guys is like, you know what, you got to play the game too. So you can't just have a 50-year-old beer leaguer, you know, just at the ready to come out and take all the ugly starts and difficult assignments. So Michael Kopech, however, is a guy that the White Sox have pretty clearly fumbled, mishandled. Who knows? I mean, maybe hasn't always been even 100% forthcoming about how he's been feeling. Clearly, the example we just cited where he's hurting, warming up for a game, and the White Sox say, hey, what could happen? Let's just roll him out of there. This is a major league team we're talking about, Malachi. Good Lord. But okay, listen, the guy's, you know, he's had some rough go of it. He's in a new role. Tell me a little bit about what you're thinking about him in a role out of the pen. Will that role change anytime soon or ever? Give me your thoughts about Michael Kopech Mach, you know, 8, whatever it is now here in 2024, already having shifted his role in mid-April. You know, what's going on with him?
So I'll add one more stat to your thing about him as a failed starter before I answer that question, which will be a little more optimistic, actually. Okay. And that's in 2022 when he got off to that kind of electric start. 13 of Kopech's 17 first half starts were on either 4 or 5 days rest. So far, all three of so that's basically, you know, a normal schedule. Mm-hmm. You're not skipping a start in the rotation. All three of Crochet's starts, not counting opening day or, you know, first start of the year on a zillion days rest or whatever, have been on 4 or 5 days rest. So the next one won't be, but just something to monitor. We'll see if those get spaced out a little more. As far as Kopech's current role, yeah, I'm there. This one's pretty simple, actually. Like, this is the role that he was built for. It seems pretty clear. That kind of high energy, high leverage, get the adrenaline flowing.
Mm-hmm.
I was really curious to see today if had he not, you know, had somebody, whoever it was who called, I don't know who called a knee high fastball to Salvador Perez on the first pitch with, as the go ahead run to this afternoon. Had he not done that, I think Pedro was going to let him go for a 2-inning save again, intentionally, which was quite interesting to me. And I'm very, very fascinated because the conversion to the bullpen was late in the spring. He was stretched out as a starter.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of Kopech as this high leverage fire, like legit multi-inning fireman, the true apotheosis of 2016 postseason Andrew Miller, you know, coming in whatever inning, throwing, you know, setting down 9 hitters and whether it's in the 6th inning or at the end of the game, I think we could see something like that. But I'm really actually fascinated by this idea of having him be a legit 2-inning closer, because look, who else is in that bullpen, first of all?
Yeah.
that's gonna lock it down. Have, you know, bring him out for the 9th, sure, but take advantage of the fact that he has been stretched out as a starter. And he, as we saw this afternoon, I'm not sure when exactly we'll be airing this, but this is this afternoon, referring to his blown save in the 8th inning against Kansas City, in which he gave up a 2-run homer to Salvador Perez to give up the lead. He blew another save recently, didn't he?
He hasn't been. Yeah.
He's going to have his bumps and bruises as he grows into this relief role, especially because he works with so much adrenaline, I'll say. Like, he's clearly someone who rides that wave to get himself up to 100, 101, 102 miles an hour. And there's going to be growing pains, but it seems pretty clear that it's the right role for him. Because when he's on, there's nobody better. There's very few people better in that role than what he has shown when he's blowing 102 miles an hour at the top of his own guy. So, I'm happy with that. I think everyone else should be too. Just let it develop.
Did it surprise you at all? Beyond just, I guess we've gotten used to being disappointed, so we sort of shoegaze when it comes to thinking about Michael Kopech. Did it surprise you to see him tickling triple digits when that seemed like maybe it wasn't something was going to happen again? I understand he's coming in. He can leave more out there because he knows he doesn't have to maybe, you know, I don't know, eat 90 pitches or something. But still, I'm not sure you can, especially given he's changed his role, like within weeks, that you can turn it on and off that way. Was it surprising he got there maybe so quickly or got there at all?
No, it actually was not surprising to me at all. Something that he is a perfect example of, I've talked about this extensively with my friend Esteban Rivera over at Fangraphs, is that sometimes part of his velo issues in the past is that he has trouble with mechanics. He has trouble connecting his upper and lower half. He has trouble just repeating everything. He is someone who I think needs to throw as hard as he can to make his mechanics work correctly. He can't slow himself down because that's what causes the kind of disjointedness, the parts of the kinetic chain, so to speak, disconnecting from each other that would lead him as a starter to go from 96 to 91 all of a sudden and not be hurt and just be kind of mechanically off. If he's not thinking, so to speak, if he's just going off that adrenaline and throwing as hard as he can, that's when he might, I think, be able to best execute his mechanics, which then, you know, leads to velocity on top of the max effort. So it's all kind of nebulous. I wish I could talk to him about these things. It'd be really interesting. But he seems to me, when he is going max effort, a lot snappier, a lot more explosive, obviously. But things don't look as disjointed as when he would be 91, 92 miles an hour not really clear what's going on. So when you put him in that, you know, 1-2 run game late in the eighth or ninth inning, you know the energy is up. You know he's just going to be balls to the wall going. It did not surprise me that that was kind of what allowed him to unlock that unfair 102-mile-an-hour rising frisbee fastball at the top of the zone that they have no chance on, which is why then I say, like, this feels like the right role for him. If this is what allows him to do that, then, yeah, it's the right role for him. I think those things are connected, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Listeners, viewers, rabid fans of Southside Sox, you're familiar with dugout metrics, although it's hard to be familiar with dugout metrics given the fact that probably in terms of a per year production, dugout metrics is our most elusive. It's our most exclusive of the podcast. But you'll also, you go back far enough with this, you know that we started this out as sort of the analytics podcast, and we had two hitters. We had Trevor Lyons, we had Luke Smales, just hitters. It was a very hitter-based, and we had some really great and popular programs. You know, at some point, you just got to sit down and say, you know what, we need someone to speak for the pitcher. And, you know, it wasn't easy to get him, but, you know, we made the right offer, again, that pay grade. We made the right offer to Valley Gates and said, hey, listen, you got the pitching chops. Come on over. Let's talk some metric stuff with us here. So listen, in case you're thinking, okay, oh man, he's talking about mechanics, keeping his speed. Okay, listen, we don't have documented evidence that Malachi Hayes hit triple digits as a college pitcher, but we also don't necessarily need it to just say that as the years go by, we can look back and say, oh, well, certainly he must have. So in other words, what I'm trying to say is this guy knows what he's talking about. So, you know. That's why this is Dugout Metrics. We're talking about guys who have been in the dugouts. You get it. There's the title. Talking their analytics and that bent. And that's what Malachi's doing for us. So, and you know, he's disputing nothing I have to say. So, as far as we know, probably one
of the evidence of me hitting triple digits is probably AI created. So,
okay. And for all we know, when those videos end up somehow on our Sox Populi YouTube channel, you won't necessarily know that the technology will be so good, you won't really know whether it's real or it's AI enhanced. So again, we'll go back and scrub any talk about this, and we'll just see that 101, 102 flash up. We'll say, oh my God, this guy, geez, what happened? There's got to be a story here as to why he's not in the major leagues. Okay, those are the White Sox pitchers. There are other pitchers to talk about. In fact, the next two we're going to discuss after the break are guys you might consider transitional White Sox pitchers, because who knows if they're going to be on the Charlotte shuttle back down to get more starts, or whether they're two very impressive, very promising first starts with the White Sox mean that, I don't know, somehow they're going to stick around. We're going to chat about that. And a couple guys going a little bit further down who Chris Getz promises we'll probably see on the south side at some point in 2024. So we got at least four more pitchers to talk about with Malachi Hayes right after the break. Hang with us. More Tales from the Dugout coming up. White Sox fans, it is Dugout Metrics 10. You wouldn't think that a longtime podcast like Dugout Metrics would just be on a 10th program. That's got to be a glitch, right? Okay, if you believe that, yeah, okay. Yeah, it is a glitch. We're really on, like, 60, but we're just calling it 10. This is number 10. We're just focused on pitching with former college pitcher, and again, for all we know, hit 101, 102 on the gun. It's Malachi Hayes, giving us a little bit of perspective on our White Sox major leaguers, and now guys who are sort of ascending to the majors. If you ask Chris Getz, shoot, there. I mean, the next four guys we're going to talk about are going to be like the core of the team for the next 10 years, but you can't really believe anything Chris Getz says, can you? So, anyhow, we had back-to-back, I believe it was just for the third time in team history, back-to-back pitchers making their first major league start. It was supposed to literally be back-to-back. Of course, we had the rain out. So it was Jonathan Cannon, which Malachi witnessed in person today, his major league debut, impressive. Nick Nastrini, a guy who we thought coming out of spring, he was sort of like the fifth starter, and then he got sick. He sort of got knocked around a little bit in Charlotte. I don't know why. But when the need came, you know, he was the guy who got the call, had an impressive start as well. Won a Dodgers product, won just a draft choice from a couple of years ago. Both look like they may have some business pitching at the major league level, if not at the very moment. real soon. Thoughts on both of those guys, Malachi? Because, hey, it's, I dare say, an optimistic tone we might be taking.
Yeah, I think, you know, it makes the signing of Mike Clevinger even more egregious. Even more somehow, if it could possibly be more egregious.
Yeah.
Than it already was. Which
offensive now on a baseball show. It's not just offensive in all the other ways.
There's no reason that Nastrini and Cannon should not be in the rotation moving forward. They're 3-15, guys. They're 3-15. Let's see what they got, because they're both interesting enough to get a shot. And, like, to give – it's just – I hope Chris Flexen is really great in the clubhouse, because I'm not clear why – he should be getting starting opportunities over these guys in the big leagues, when one of the major failures of the previous rebuild, as we know, is the fact that they did not stumble across any of those diamonds in the rough or mid-level prospects that turned into stars solely because they got an opportunity to play. So, you know, Nick Nastrini, he's a finished package at this point. I don't see what he has left to do in the minor leagues. The question is going to be about whether he can put the ball, whether he can put the ball where he wants to put it, because the stuff is a fairly high end major league starter package. You know, the velocity is not there really, which is why he's not a premium prospect, so to speak. You know, he's living 93, 94 miles an hour, but he, you know, mechanically, he almost gives me a little shades of young mid-career Zach Greinke. In some ways, he has a kind of interesting, delivery. That, you know, it's not super interesting visually, I should say, but he gets out to the side a little bit, but he does a really good job of staying underneath the ball. Gets real true backspin on it, which means his fastball has a lot of zip and a lot of rise, even though it's not that hard. It'll only be 93, 94 miles an hour. He, you know, top out 95, 96 maybe. But if you put it in the right place at the top third of the zone, hitters are going to swing under it every single time, because it's just got so much prototypical rise to it. And again, the changeup, slider, curveball are more or less finished products. The slider looks nice. He had some trouble commanding it in the zone. It didn't really hang any of them, but also, you know, that's it's going to be a solid pitch, but again, command is the question. I really did enjoy how, after the first inning or two, I just actually watched before this podcast his entire outing pretty much, because I had only gotten a chance to see bits and pieces of it. And what really stuck out to me about Nastrini was how he got comfortable throwing the changeup the second time through the order, and on once he got through one or two innings in which he was mostly fastball slider, he got pretty adept at actually putting that changeup in the zone and then dropping it below and out of the zone when he needed to chase against a lefty. So that's a really good sign as far as being able to get both, you know, hitters of both hands out and work through a lineup two or three times. He had control issues coming up in the minors. He had control issues in college. He would have been drafted a lot higher than he was if he hadn't gotten literal, like, yips at UCLA. So that's the main question there. You know, the stuff is there, and I don't see any purpose in letting him waste bullets against AAA pitchers. Let's spend the rest of this year figuring out if he can be consistent in putting that fastball at the top of the zone so he can get hitters to swing under it instead of leaving it out over their plate, where at 94 miles an hour, it's probably going to get hit. Can he put the slider in good spots in the zone enough to avoid falling behind in the count and letting hitters sit on, you know, a hanging off speed pitch or a fastball that's not where it's supposed to be? Those are the questions that need answering with him at this point. He acquitted himself very, very well in that first start, showed a lot of potential. So there's no reason he shouldn't be, you know, get the next 5 months to show us whether he can do those things with the consistency or even more consistency that he did on Monday night.
Now, Nastrini had a lot of work at the AA level. I believe only two or three starts at AAA. Jonathan Cannon, also just two or three starts at AAA, but not nearly the body work. I mean, he's only been a professional for a couple of years at AA. So this is a guy who's rawer in terms of just his overall professional resume. Any difference in how you see him playing out. Nastrini, in your book, should be, you know, whatever. He's the number two, number three star. He's in the rotation now. He's not going back. Is Jonathan Cannon indifferent, whether it's based on what you just saw, how he handled his first start here in the doubleheader, or, you know, what you might speculate? I mean, is there reason for him to get seasoning just because maybe he's got a little bit raw arm than Nastrini, or is it the same situation?
Yes, he has less of an argument to be in the big leagues than Nastrini for basically what you just said. That being said, from what I saw today, I mean, maybe it was the Kansas City Royals lineup, but I don't know. He's got some funkiness about him. He filled up the zone. I'm going to go kind of old school with my evaluation on him here just because I don't know a ton about him. And there's not a ton remarkable about him, you know, as a prospect. I think based on what he showed against the Royals today, he deserves at least a few more chances to show that he might be one of those guys that actually doesn't need a lot of high minor season. He had a high, you know, five pitch arsenal. He, from what I saw, commanded it fairly well, made a few mistakes. It's not like raw bat missing stuff. He led with the sinker, which is, you know, kind of on the outs, especially when it's not super high velocity. But he, you know, did run it up to 96 miles an hour a couple times. But again, like Nastrini, he commanded a changeup very, very well. It got a CSW rate around, I don't know, it was in the 40s, I want to say. His sweeper looked very, very nice. He's got that nice side-to-side breaking ball like Nastrini. It's a different package, even though those two pitches are kind of the same. He does have this strange crossfire delivery where he starts out, you know, with his feet kind of open, almost facing, you know, with his kind of pelvis almost facing the hitter. And then by the time he's delivering, and I'm trying to display a crossfire. long story short, it's a little, I think Jake Arrieta is maybe a good comparison right there, except someone who starts out a little bit even more closed. He goes over the head, so it's a little bit unorthodox, but the fact that he was able to consistently, you know, hit the strike zone with that kind of funkiness was visually to me striking. I don't know, man. I'm kind of spitballing here because I don't really have anything in the way of dugout metrics on here, but it's hard to acquit yourself like that in your first major league start. So, yeah, who else are you going to give it to? Mike Clevinger? Fuck off. No.
Yeah.
Give it to Jonathan Cannon instead.
Yeah.
Let him stick around until he really shows, no, you actually do need more seasoning.
Malachi Hayes conveniently ignoring the fun-hating elephant in the room, Brad Keller, as another option to take starts away from pitchers who, I mean, we might not have even necessarily known this to start the season. Oh, of course, Nastrini really did break camp as sort of a italicized or whatever, de facto fifth starter. So that one's not a shocker. I mean, if anything, we would have expected maybe a start sooner. Cannon, okay, you know, maybe that's a little surprise. And I'm sorry if that means Charlotte Knights, you really, once again, are going to have a starting rotation of made up of 70% openers or something. But, I mean, we can't worry about that. We need guys who can throw who might actually have promise in the major leagues going forward, and I'm sorry, the two guys who just started for us fit that bill. Okay, so that said, let's go with the core four here, because we have core two, who at least technically right now are on the roster. If you know, Cannon had gotten shelled, or if there was some plan that no matter what, he could throw a no-hitter, he was still going back, he'd already be down, because the guy who's got sent down as the 27th man was Jared Schuster, and it wasn't Cannon. So looks like he might get another chance, as he's deserved. Okay, couple guys, and this seemed like at the moment, Chris gets hype of, well, you know, we just traded the one guy who can make starts for us this year. So let me justify by saying the two pitchers we got back are going to be in the major leagues by the end of the year. It sort of really sounded like he was trying a little too hard there, but based on the four-game, two starts apiece audition in Birmingham, which might as well be AAA at this point, based on the fact that guys sort of just pass through, maybe get their ticket punched, their lunch card punched a couple times at Charlotte on the way to Chicago. Drew Thorpe and Hario Iriarte have both been pretty unbelievable. You know, AA, small sample size, et cetera, et cetera. Caveat this entire podcast, of course, but for guys who gets have said, hey, they're on a faster track. Iriarte, in fact, started, I mean, I know this is all probably just administrative, but started, seemed like a shocking pick to be AAA. He was on the Charlotte roster and then got pushed down. These guys seem like they're not long for Birmingham, not just because nobody can start in Charlotte, and the couple guys who could, Davis Martin, Sean Burke, I mean, not healthy enough to even be pitching yet, I guess. So let's talk about the next. I mean, we've got a fresh wave who maybe are in Chicago for good. Let's be optimistic. It seems like there might be a couple guys who could, like, legitimately fill out a rotation who might actually be doing that by the end of the year. I know this is we're really starting to fish here, but, you know, talk to me about what you know in terms of Drew Thorpe, very highly touted, arguably the number one, even above Noah Schultz, prospect in the system, and Iriarte. This is not a bad combo.
Yeah, so I don't want to speak too much on whether I think they should be moving up quickly, because, you know, I haven't watched video of them yet. And while, you know, the numbers are great, the numbers say, like you said, they are not long for Birmingham. With minor league numbers, it's more of a question of how you're getting those numbers than the actual numbers themselves, because there's things that work against minor league hitters that don't work against major league hitters. There's a lot of things that work against minor league hitters that don't work against major league hitters. So I honestly wish I had time to watch all that footage, but I don't, so I haven't. That being said, what I do know and can say is that Thorpe doesn't profile as the kind of pitcher that needs to spend a ton of time in the minor leagues. He started for three years started for 3 years at a, you know, high profile college program. Made a lot of starts. He made his first full professional season was 2023, had pretty much a full season. He's not somebody who makes his hay on high velocity. He, like Nastrini, is a guy whose fastball will sit in the, you know, even lower than Nastrini and really the low 90s, 90, 91, 92, 93, but has that kind of perfect backspin approach angle and, you know, combination with release point that makes it impossible for hitters to pick it up and makes it get on them really, really quickly. So when you talk about pitchers needing seasoning in the minors and why it takes them a long time to get to the majors, it might mean because they're drafted out of high school and need 3 or 4 years to build up to a major league workload. It might mean that they throw 100 miles an hour, but they're going to need 3 years to refine everything else, because you can get away with that against college hitters, but don't work in the pros. Thorpe, like I said, has all of this experience under his belt. He can throw 150, 160 innings this year. There's no question about that. His skill set is not one that requires a ton more refining. His command is good. If his command wasn't good, he would not be the reigning minor league pitcher of the year.
Yeah.
You know, so I say Nastrini's the complete package, or a finished package. Sorry. From what I can see, there's not, you know, if we see another 3, 4, 5 starts of Thorpe being dominant like this, all the circumstantial evidence would point to him being like, yeah, there's no real reason in wasting any more of his bullets in the minor leagues. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like there's a lot more that needs to be done. As far as Iriarte goes, I'll let you respond to that first. Sorry.
Oh, no. I mean, you know, one of the other things I was just going to throw out there, you know, we hear about a lot. I don't know if it's overhyped, you know, but a guy who you yourself, I'm sure, were trying to develop as wide an arsenal as you can. When you can't develop that, then you're often a bullpen guy. And that's not necessarily a bad thing if you can throw hard enough, or if that second pitch is good enough to keep guys, you know, off balance for shorter outings, it works. So another important aspect, which I think you pretty much did also just say, is when you've got that type of arsenal, you're not coming to the pros having to develop, say, that third pitch. That always seems to be the elusive thing, determining whether guys, you know, can take on, you know, a bigger load of innings versus not. And some guys just can't, you know, can't get past the fact that, you know, they've always known to rely on a big arm, say, or maybe an incredible breaking pitch, but just can't develop maybe that third to be a guy to move up into a rotation. It does seem like Drew Thorpe as much, or maybe even more so than Nastrini, given going all the way back, has that readiness. And so in your mind, there is somewhat of a parallel track, even though one being a younger pitcher and less professional wear in innings. But he sort of follows in Nastrini footsteps in terms of really on paper, and he's sort of putting it in action now as a guy who seems like he might be right around the corner to being ready.
Yeah. I mean, again, minor league pitcher of the year.
Yep.
Those guys tend to not be in the minor leagues for all that long. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot blocking him, and maybe he'll get shelled. I don't know.
Yeah.
In his next few starts, and we'll have to take a step back, but I don't know when exactly it'll be, but you know, it seems pretty likely that even if the state of the team weren't what it was, we'd be seeing Drew Thorpe for much of the second half of this year.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, I'm not going to diss the White Sox and their development group after we've just touted the fact that Jonathan Cannon's made a pretty quick move to the majors. But, you know, let's point out that, you know, Drew Thorpe has had the benefit of other teams instructing him, which can never hurt.
Just other teams, like possibly the single best organization.
Yeah, you know.
Internally in baseball.
So. Yeah,
the Yankees could afford to trade Drew Thorpe because they make Drew Thorpe play.
Yes, way to use the cheat code, White Sox, for once. Nicely done. All right, Iriarte, certainly a little different background and a little different results than Thorpe, but still, wow. Double A start, pretty sweet. Arguably better than what Thorpe's done. Again, through two starts, who cares? But pretty good guy to keep pace with.
Yeah, definitely. And just because of the lack of the track record relative to Thorpe, this is where it's helpful. There you can say, okay, Thorpe spent, when he was, 18, 19, 20, he was throwing 100 innings in the Big West against high-level Division I hitters. When Iriarte was 19, 20, he was putting up a six ERA and walking six guys per nine innings in the in low A ball. Mm-hmm. He has less of a track record as a starter. His performance has gone up and down more. Mm-hmm. The stuff is there as much as it is with Thorpe, but that's kind of an example of what seasoning means. Is we need to see it for more than two starts. You see it from Thorpe for two starts, and it's kind of a continuation of what you've seen from him ever since he set foot in pro ball. You see it from Iriarte, and it says, okay, great. Now I need to know what actually he's doing better than he was doing last year. I need to know what has changed and why it's going to be consistent moving forward. So it would be great if he was dominant enough that we saw him in the bigs by the end of the year. But just because of the lack of the volume there, I mean, Thorpe, wrong in my throat, excuse me. I think we're just a half step behind with Iriarte there, where maybe he's competing. If he does well, maybe he's competing for a spot, out of camp next year. Mm-hmm. But it does seem like there just needs to be more consistency solidified with his arsenal, with his velocity, and with his performance before we're ready to fast track him and say, okay, 10 starts, we have seen what we need to see.
Yeah. And it makes sense. It would seem to me, I don't know, reading between the lines here, that it would seem to make sense that he's a guy you actually do give a little bit of trial time, or at least a little bit of trial time in Charlotte versus saying, oh, you know what? You had, 22 great starts in Birmingham. Let's just I guess if he sticks around in Birmingham that long for some reason, but he's a guy you might see, let's say by the break or even anticipating the break, especially if he keeps killing it, maybe getting that Charlotte call to see, all right, let's go at least 10 or 15 in Charlotte before, maybe you get a cup of coffee or something, as a reward for killing it all 2024. But he's a guy who seems like he would almost certainly make a little bit of a, more so than Thorpe, a Charlotte stop.
I'm sorry, I think you cut out for the last like 10 seconds.
Oh, sorry. Well, that's fine. Because, that was the smartest point I made the whole podcast, so I will not even be able to repeat it. But Tim, it seems to me that Iriarte, given what you just outlined, is a player who would stand a much bigger chance of having an actual stint in Charlotte and having there be purpose to that versus Thorpe, who, as you've outlined, is a guy who, what else are you going to do? And maybe getting knocked around for a start in the you know, crazy bandbox, weird air of Charlotte isn't going to do him any good. Iriarte, you might say, okay, you know what? We're moving you up. We may see you by the end of the year, but I think we need to at least have a little, a pack of 10 starts or so, you know, with the Knights before we make that final jump.
Yeah, I think the name of the game of development at the end of the day is facing challenges and finding ways to adjust and overcome them. You could say probably pretty reasonably that there aren't too many particular challenges that Charlotte and the International League are going to give Thorpe that he's not going to encounter, he hasn't already encountered and that he won't be able to better develop against at the big league level. I don't know if that's going to be the case with Iriarte. People use the word polish a lot, and it's kind of questionable in a lot of senses. But yeah, it comes down to having different kinds of challenges, and I think that can Drew Thorpe get quad A hitters out doesn't really answer a lot of questions for us as far as whether he's going to be an effective big league pitcher, knowing, again, what his game is. That might be a more pertinent, a more informative question environment for somebody like Iriarte, or even someone like Jonathan Cannon, frankly. But, you know, you got to go pitcher by pitcher, and hopefully, I mean, I hope Brian Bannister has a better idea of all of his individual pitchers than I do, because I don't know, the plan isn't totally materializing to me yet.
No. Throwing stuff off the wall, that's sort of the theme of the White Sox been, for probably our lifetimes. Okay, we got to touch on one more guy before we bump up against our hour limit. But here's the bad news. I mean, we've got Crochet. We got Cannon, Mastrini, and let's face it, we got Thorpe, Iriarte. So I'm sorry, there's not going to be a spot in the future rotation for you, Noah Schultz. So you're going to just have to make it work. Noah Schultz is a guy that we're all super hyped about, and we want to say, okay, he should be in the major leagues tomorrow. The guy has pitched, I believe, coming into the season, like 19 pro innings or something. Just nuts. They really, really, really monitored his usage. He was getting consistently, like 3 inning starts, and he was killing it. I mean, preposterous stuff. I think realistically about 1 earned run that wasn't a home run, and I think maybe 4 total. At low A last year, has had one rough outing already in 2024. That's going to happen. So without going too deep and breaking past our deadline here at Malachi, what is a reasonable type of best case scenario or realistic scenario in terms of how this guy advances? Because he really he's one of those high school arms you referred to. He sort of hasn't, quote unquote, done anything, despite how incredibly dominant he is and how his ceiling just seems so very high. But just to calm us all down, or calm me down, what is the realistic steps for him getting closer to the South side, providing things go as well as they should for, arguably the number one prospect overall, number one arm, certainly number one left-hander for the White Sox?
I think there is an absolute best case scenario where there's like no hiccups with anything, where we see him by the end of 2025.
Okay.
That's not a very realistic scenario. Mm-hmm. That entails him getting up to something like, 80, 90 innings this year, right? Which also then, puts him up. I mean, he's already at high A, so that probably puts him at double A by the end of the year, which then gets him ideally to, 120, 130, 140 innings the following season, 2025, which, if they then go well, the last few of which could very conceivably come in Chicago if they have been as effective as they have been in the low minors. But, things rarely go according to plan with unprecedented 6'9" high school lefties. who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? This is what I mean. This is what I meant earlier when I was talking about Yuri Perez and kind of throwing your hands up as far as load management, where it's, you could put him on this real careful build up. Okay, he's going to get 80 innings, then he's going to build up to 120, and then he's going to build up to 160. Is it going to keep him healthy? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But as far as, having him feel good enough to be effective, I think that's probably the best case scenario. And I think the more realistic scenario is that we get to him sometime in, maybe mid, late 2026 or even 2027 early.
I mean, bad news for White Sox fans, good news for Noah Schultz, because by that time, of course, Garrett Crochet will have signed a big contract with another team. We won't have control over him any longer, so there will be an open spot in the rotation. So, you know, for Noah Schultz, that's great news. For us wanting some continuity and actual the pitching that has been the hallmark of the White Sox successful teams all the time, not the best news. But, okay, we did touch on Noah as well. We had a whole nother aspect of this podcast we're going to do that now. We're kicking to another one. But the good news for you super fans of Dugout Metrics is Podcast 11 is not going to be like a year from now or next draft per se. It could be like maybe a week from now. So, you know, if you're hyped for it, get your t-shirts back out, press them, wear them, because, you know, in another week or so, I might be talking with Malachi again. Maybe addressing this weird thing that we touched on, just a touch. Pitcher injuries, why, how, what's going on? Should you be warming your arm up to make a comeback, given the fact that everybody's just falling dead like flies? But, you know, we'll get to all that next podcast if you'll have me talk to you again, Malachi.
Absolutely. Anytime. Okay.
That's the important
talking part, not to the comeback part.
You know. Okay. Well, I'll keep piping in. And you know, heck with those Dugout Metrics hitters. We don't care about them. We're just talking pitching. And frankly, this year is the year to just be talking pitching because wow, who will ever hit for the White Sox again? That's a whole nother series of Dugout Metrics that we'll get to probably in about 2026. But Malachi, thanks for doing this with me. A lot of work you put into actually providing smart answers instead of my red-faced babbling. But anyhow, we will probably have a number 11, oh gosh, sooner than later, and that's great news. But anyhow, thanks for accompanying me on this one. And hey, maybe we'll talk, geez, just in a matter of a few days.
Talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening, reading, watching all that stuff, and knowing when to pay attention to the smart guys on the podcast. So send your fan mail to Malachi Hayes. He'll be back. You don't have to get him back, but he'll definitely be back. You send that fan mail. Take it easy for another week or so, and we'll Dugout Metrics again sometime soon.